GreenSense is brought to you by JLT Specialty USA, the world's largest energy insurance broker, serving the entire energy continuum. Visit JLTUS.com.
Welcome to GreenSense, a weekly look at the people, policies, and innovations that are changing our world. Here's Robert Colangelo.
Hey, thanks for joining us. I'm Robert Colangelo. I'm a scientist, author, and environmental entrepreneur who founded and serves as host to GreenSense.
I'm Bob Kessler, our executive producer. This week, how to get rid of all that plastic? Why don't we feed it to the caterpillars? Food waste is a much bigger problem than just leftover bread. And so what can be in the next farm bill that could help cut down on it? We'll find out.
All coming up on this week's edition of GreenSense. The food waste numbers are almost unbelievable. The United States spends $218 billion each year on food that's never eaten. 40% of the food produced in the U.S. ends up in landfills, while 1 in 7 Americans faces food insecurity. This is part of a new report on food waste from the Harvard Law School Food Law and Policy Clinic. And to help us understand how we can improve our food system in the U.S. is Christina Rice, one of the authors of the report. Welcome, Christina.
Thank you for having me.
Your report has many ideas you feel that should be in the next farm bill. What are the main areas of actions that you think should be taken to cut down on food waste?
That's a great question. So as you mentioned, 40% of all food in the U.S. goes to waste. And at the same time, every 5 years, we have the U.S. Farm Bill, which is the most powerful piece of food and agricultural legislation in the U.S. And it basically, you know, covers anything from growing the food to the food getting to your table. But since the inception of the bill, it hasn't covered reducing food waste and making sure food actually gets to the place of families or consumers. And so in the report, there's a lot of recommendations. There are 17 recommendations split across 4 categories. And I think one of the top recommendations that any consumer or any household could really follow is around date labels. I think we all see them every time we go to the store, every time we buy something, and there's use by, sell by, all these dates that most people think relate to food safety when it really relates to quality. You know, when the food's going to taste the freshest. So I think one of our recommendations is for, in the Farm Bill, for the federal government to standardize and clarify really what those date labels mean. And so consumers will stop throwing away, products that are still pretty tasty and still safe to consume.
One of the things that amazes me is that the U.S. farmer is one of the most productive in the world when it comes to capacity. Mm-hmm. We have some of the most advanced logistics companies, and we're able to move product around the world efficiently. All this technology, why is there so much food waste? Can you give me just a simple answer on what's the main reason why there's so much food waste?
So there's a lot of food waste, I think, because you have to look at that entire supply chain. So all those things that you just mentioned, everything that goes into producing food, there's food loss along the way. So at the farm level, about 16% of food waste occurs at the farm level. At the production or manufacturing level, about 2% occurs. And then the bulk, a lot of the food waste, and this is another reason why date labels, standardizing date labels is so important. A lot of food waste occurs at the consumer, at the household level.
Has food waste become worse over time in the U.S.? Do we waste a larger percent of it compared to earlier years?
Yes, we do. The amount of food wasted has increased by around 50% from 1974. So we see an increase.
Why?
I think a lot, just as consumers and people, the way that we eat has changed. More people are eating out, or they're buying more food from the grocery store and aren't meal planning as much. So I think just kind of our culture and the way we consume food and appreciate food has really changed over time.
Do you think we could really legislate our way out of food waste?
I think it's a great federal policy, and I think even kind of in the climate we have right now, food waste is really a bipartisan issue, and there's both sides and industry and consumers are really on board with trying to figure out what we can do to really address this problem, and federal policy is a really good tool to utilize.
Isn't it the federal policy that created these date labels?
So no, that's a great question. Date labels actually is not regulated at the federal level at all. So there aren't any laws or regulations specifically related to date labels. And that's actually something that's regulated at the state level at this point.
If you've just joined us, I'm Robert Colangelo, and this is Green Sense. My guest is Christina Rice, who's one of the authors of the Harvard Law School Food Law and Policy Clinic report on how to solve our food waste issue. Well, Christina, can we look to other countries who are maybe less wasteful with food, who might be setting a good example on policies and processes that control food waste?
Yeah, I think there's other countries, they're also really looking into this issue and looking at different things they can do to reduce food waste. And one good example that we try to look at is the UK, because the UK, about 5 years ago, they started this consumer education campaign around food waste called Love Food, Hate Waste. And they've seen the amount of food waste has reduced by 21% over 5 years. And they've really seen a return on their investment with this consumer education campaign. So I think that's a really great model, and that's something that we could really do in the U.S. as well.
So we were talking about how maybe legislation may not always be the only way to change behavior. You just mentioned education. What about economics? Mm-hmm. Are there economic factors that could come into play that could discipline the market to minimize food waste?
I think there are. There's different relating economics to policies. There's different policies that states have implemented that have actually seen an increase in job creation and the amount of money and a generating amount of money and profit in the cities. So I think that is one thing you can look at as well, just to benefit the state when you're looking at economics.
You talked about the UK as a country we can look to shape our policies to. Have you looked at benchmarking food waste to other countries? And is there a target or a goal that you think the U.S. should reach as far as a nation and a percentage of food waste?
Well, the U.S. actually, about 2 years ago, the U.S. Department of Agriculture and the Environmental Protection Agency, they announced the nation's first ever food reduction goal. And so the current goal right now in the U.S. is to reduce the amount of food waste in half by 2030. So when we're talking about federal policy and different solutions to reduce food waste, we're kind of looking at that goal, and we're looking at different ways we can actually reach that goal by 2030.
What's your opinion of this Congress and the Trump administration? Are they willing to consider food waste in the next farm bill? Is this even an issue that hits on their radar scope with all the confusion that's in D.C. and the White House these days?
So I think, as I mentioned, you know, food waste reduction, it really is a bipartisan issue. And so it's something that's good for people, it's good for the planet, and it's really good for profit and economics. And so if you're looking at job creation, food waste reduction and food recovery and food recycling can really help increase jobs. One report found that implementing about 27 food waste reduction solutions could create 15,000 new jobs, at the same time generating $1.9 billion in annual business profit. And then it's also something that the industry is on board. Industry across the spectrum, they're doing, you know, education campaigns on food waste. They're looking at different recycling solutions. And so I think the fact that industry is on board and it's a bipartisan issue, that I think there is a chance that even in this administration, some food waste reduction stuff will make it into the next farm bill and different federal legislation.
Only about 5% of the country are farmers these days, and most of our listeners are not in the food production business. So give us some concrete things that our listeners can do to prevent food waste in their day-to-day lives.
Okay. I think so. One thing that the listeners can first do is going back to date labels, actually taking the time to, just because a food says it's past date, you know, tomorrow, or it was past date the day before, don't just automatically throw that product away. Actually taste it. Make sure it's actually just, you know, use your taste buds and your sight before you automatically throw that food away. Another thing is meal planning. Actually planning what you're going to eat for the week, or writing a grocery list instead of, so you're buying exactly what you're going to need for that week instead of a lot of produce or a lot of food and throwing that away because you don't need it. Another thing is to use your freezer. You know, if there's, if you buy a lot of food in bulk and you're not sure if you're going to use it by the end of the week or the next week, use your freezer, freeze your food. And then also just learn more about food waste reduction. There's great tips. There's a lot of websites that you can look at for different information about food waste, and really just spread the word to your friends and family and let them know, you know, we are wasting a lot of food as a country, and there's a lot of things we can do to help reduce it.
All good tips to eat by. Christina, thanks for joining us on Green Sense, and have a great day.
Thank you. You too.
That's Christina Rice, one of the authors of the Harvard Law School Food Law and Policy Clinic. I'm Robert Colangelo. Subscribe to the Green Sense Radio podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play when you visit greensensefarms.com.
This is Bob Kessler, executive producer of Green Sense Radio. Every week, we cover environmental issues and meet passionate people and sustainable innovators. You might have noticed we do it with very few commercials. Our advertisers, they're just part of what supports Green Sense. We need the help of our listeners, also passionate people who care about the planet and know the value of independent media, which matters now more than ever. We've just launched our fundraising drive so you can help us continue to bring you informative and inspiring shows. Your contributions will cover our small production staff, which seeks out and schedules interviews, edits them, and puts together Green Sense every week. Plus, there's the cost of online hosting and studio equipment. So when you visit greensensefarms.com, click on Radio Show to make a contribution via Podbean. It takes just a few minutes, and as we often say on the program, individual actions multiplied by millions can yield big results. So if you're inspired by our positive and informative shows, we're asking you to help keep Green Sense going. Visit greensensefarms.com and click Radio Show to contribute to our fundraising drive via Podbean. On behalf of all of us at Green Sense Radio, thank you.
There have been lots of efforts made to reduce the amount of plastics we produce, but what about all of it that's already there? Paolo Bombelli with the University of Cambridge is co-author of a new paper about how a certain insect larvae could be part of the answer. Dr. Bombelli, welcome to Green Sense.
Hi, thank you.
How did you and your team discover that a waxworm, which is raised for fishing bait, likes to eat plastic?
Well, you want to say that there was a bit of serendipity, as my colleague in Spain, she's a beekeeper, and she ended up noticing that some of the tools they use for maintain the beehive end up to be damaged. And some of these tools are actually made by plastic. And that was the starting point from the investigation.
Does this waxworm like all kinds of plastic or just plastic coated with honey?
Exactly. That was exactly the point, because initially we were wondering whether perhaps we were dealing with biodegradable plastic. Then we start investigating the type of plastic, noticed that the plastic was polyethylene. And that from that point, we start trying to pin down what was causing this damage on the plastic, and end up discovering that these larvae.
So plastic is a complex polymer, and you saw that this worm would eat the plastic. How did you learn how it breaks down that polymer through its digestive system?
Okay, somehow this is an excellent question for which, unfortunately, I don't have an excellent answer in this moment. In a sense that I think the good news is those larvae are used to munch through wax. And wax is indeed a very complex polymer. Therefore, in some respects, those animals are mistaken polyethylene for a wax.
Ah,
so,
very interesting.
This is very interesting. This is what we think is happening. Point is, we're not really sure what they end up doing with this plastic. So we're not sure that we really need to say that they are feeding on plastic or they are just munching on plastic.
Well, if
so these remain as a
so you're not sure
if, open question.
Yeah, you're not sure if they digest the plastic or if they just are chewing on it and get rid of it when they're done chewing on it.
Correct. See, we're not able to define all these details. However, we were able to identify some signature for chemical modification of the plastic. So, regardless on the fact that we don't know exactly all the details of what is happening to the munched plastic, I can tell you for sure that there are some degree of plastic degradation on the chemical level. And this is indeed probably one of the most important points of our finding.
So, boil this down in simple terms for me and our listeners. What will your research gain, and how will that make all this waste plastic go away?
Okay, let's try to go step by step. So the reason because we all love plastic is because plastic is a very stable material. So we can, for example, use it in tools that is going to last for longer. However, this means that when we decide to discard plastic, these end up being a waste material. And the waste material is going to last for very long. Therefore, be able to degrade specifically biodegrade plastic could be very important. And point is, doing this job is very difficult. In fact, the plastic is very stable. So what we end up discovering is perhaps, and when I say perhaps, it's because we need to work more on this point. Perhaps there is something inside of these larvae, and this something could be an enzyme, could be a bacteria, perhaps enzymes generated by bacteria. We need to be very open on this point because we're not sure that are able to break the chemical bonds inside the plastic.
You're listening to Green Sense. I'm Robert Colangelo. My guest is Dr. Paolo Bombelli with the University of Cambridge, and he's the co-author of a new paper about plastic-eating waxworms, and we're talking about that here on the show today. Dr. Bombelli, is it hard to raise these worms? Are they readily available?
As far as concerned, the answer is yes, because it's not me that I'm actually farming the worms themselves. So apparently, yes, it's not a big challenge because a very similar one can be used for fishing. However, bear in mind that we are not really planning to use these worm for a large application. So the discovery was done on this material, and also probably we're gonna keep studying these larvae. In the long term, we want to discover the molecular and probably enzymatic basis of the process, and then use it in a more industrial scale with a biotechnological application.
How long do you think it's going to take before we see this being used in a commercial situation and be available to the public or industry?
Okay, I would love to be able to answer this question. What I can tell you is we are working and we're doing as much as we could. And of course, there are other considerations that we need to consider. For example, not necessarily a technological scientific solution can be easily implemented, not because it's not feasible, but perhaps because the cost is too high. So, therefore, what we're going to do in the next few months/years is try to understand the mechanism on which this process operates, then implement this in reality, something that unfortunately in this moment is to be above my understanding.
What is the biggest challenge in gaining funding for this kind of research?
Well, I guess the challenge is be able to prove that what you are going to discover is actually feasible and usable on a large scale. This is my understanding, but perhaps I'm wrong.
Well, when we think about the magnitude of the plastic garbage problem, and we think about the Great Pacific Garbage Patch, which is made of so many small pieces of plastic, you would think that on a societal level, this would be a high priority to solve this problem, and that there'd be a lot of funding sources out there.
I think your assumption is correct. However, I'm pretty sure we can name more than one example in which as a global society, we should do something. For example, I give you a very trivial example, water. We might face a problem with fresh water globally, but not necessarily we always take great care of fresh water. So in a similar way, not necessarily this problem, that this is a problem, is always tackled and always considered on the right way, on the right scale. So, sometimes something that is so obvious and not necessarily is perceived and actually following in the right way.
Is there other work that you're working on that is geared towards sustainability or the environment that you'd like to share with us?
Matter of fact, I think I tried to point out that this project was initiated and led by colleagues in Spain. And I was very, very pleased to be part of the project. However, my other life is dedicated to microorganisms, specifically photosynthetic microorganisms. And I'm studying the intracellular electron transport. I know it sounds to be very away from any possible application, but actually there is an application, because an electron transport means be able perhaps to generate electricity using photosynthetic organism. In one line, generating electricity using plants. So this is my other project.
That's fascinating, and we'd like to maybe have you back on the show to talk about that, because using plants to generate electricity sounds like it could really solve, be a big part of the solution to our energy plan. Thank you very much for joining us on GreenSense, and we wish you the best of luck with your research.
Thank you very much for having me.
That's Dr. Paolo Bombelli with the University of Cambridge and co-author of a new paper about the plastic-eating waxworm. I'm Robert Colangelo reminding you to subscribe to the GreenSense Radio podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play when you visit greensensefarms.com. Thanks for listening to this week's edition of GreenSense. Head over to greensensefarms.com, click on Radio Show, and support our Podbean patron drive. Now more than ever, it's time to support independent media so we can bring you great shows like the one next week.
We're talking about food waste this week and those staggering numbers. What if something like beer, what kind of beer you drink, could help reduce food waste? There's a new kind of beer called Toast. Actually, it's not new in the UK. It's been there a while. It's coming to the US. They use leftover bread that's otherwise wasted to make their beer.
Visit greensensefarms.com and you can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. You can check out the list of radio stations that air our show. But most importantly, stay fresh, keep innovating, because when you're green, you grow.
GreenSense is recorded in the Duneland ecosystem on the eastern shores of Lake Michigan at GreenSense Farms, the largest indoor commercial vertical farm in the world. We walk the walk and talk the talk, growing leafy green vegetables 24/7, free of pesticides, herbicides, with non-GMO seeds, conserving resources, and reducing waste. Watch us grow. The program is copyright GreenSense Farms, all rights reserved.
GreenSense is brought to you by JLT Specialty USA, the world's largest energy insurance broker, serving the entire energy continuum. Visit jltus.com.